Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. An MTS bus strike has disrupted service across East County and the South Bay. Hear why drivers are on strike and how this impacts your transportation options on today's show. Then on Crime Beat, a man who opened fire on neighbors triggered a SWAT team operation in Lemon Grove. El Cajon police have arrested a suspect accused of groping a 12-year-old girl near a school. San Diego County's sheriff is seeking public help to identify a hit-and-run driver who killed a pedestrian in Lemon Grove. And Hamul residents are on edge over fears that a serial dog killer has been shooting dogs in their community. Supervisors have voted to hold a special election to replace Nathan Fletcher, who resigned amid allegations of sexual assault and harassment. Hear about three candidates who are running for the seat on our show today, and there's still time for more people to sign up to run. 15 properties in East County are under a federal quarantine due to vesicular stomatitis virus. That's a disease afflicting horses and other livestock that can also spread to humans. Find out how to protect your animals and yourself on today's show. Attorneys general from several states, including California, have filed a lawsuit against telemarketers over scam robocalls, including calls purporting to be from Medicare and Social Security, and we'll have details. Sheriff's investigators have used genetic genealogy to identify the body of a woman found over 30 years ago at a campground on the Los Coyotes Reservation near Warner Springs, but the identity of her killer remains unsolved. A La Mesa councilwoman's proposal to ban flying non-governmental flags at City Hall drew a hail of opposition from the LGBTQ community as Pride Month approaches. On People Power, hear about a lakeside salon owner who was once homeless and now gives back to help others by hosting an inspiring Haircuts for the Homeless event. On Green Scene, Sweetwater Water Authority has tentatively approved funding aimed at repairing erosion caused by extreme draining that killed off all the fish. The district says it hopes to reopen public access to the lake soon, but it hasn't committed to when the popular fishing site will actually be restocked with fish. The U.S. Supreme Court has issued a decision severely limiting the Environmental Protection Agency's ability to regulate waters and wetlands, drawing criticism from environmental groups. El Cajon has added basketball courts at Wells Park, and Mayor Bill Wells touts research on how recreational opportunities help reduce crime in communities. On Tribal Beat, the Hamul Casino's high-rise hotel has broken ground, and we'll have details. And finally, a cooperative effort by federal, state, and local authorities after an alarming spike in fentanyl overdose deaths here has led to beefed-up enforcement efforts along our border locally, resulting in a major increase in arrests for fentanyl smuggling, including cartel operations. So stay tuned for the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Bus service through East County and the South Bay has been disrupted by a labor strike that started May 23rd and could last for weeks. The strike was called by Teamsters Local 693 against TransDev, which contracts with MTS for service in these areas. MTS advises riders, please plan for limited or no service, effective immediately and until further notice. Trolley service is not affected by the strike. The strike is over alleged unfair labor practices, working conditions, and labor dignity. The union also accuses TransDev of failing to negotiate in good faith. Issues include split shifts and lack of access to bathrooms and lunchrooms on some shifts. These problems have led to high turnover among bus drivers, with 209 drivers leaving in the past year. Workers are not paid for work between shifts. Mechanics are honoring the strike by bus drivers, and some have joined the picket line. TransDev, in a statement to KPBS, said it is negotiating with the Teamsters local and hopes to come to an amicable resolution. The company claims it is negotiating in good faith, has made some financial concessions, and is open to continued dialogue. Meanwhile, consumers are advised to use other forms of transportation during the strike. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is John Tidwell.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
A 7-hour standoff with Sheriff's SWAT team in Lemon Grove on May 25th ended with the suspect surrendering. A tense situation began around 8 in the morning when Brandon Andrade fired multiple rounds at neighbors' homes, callers reported to Sheriff's Dispatch. One neighbor was injured, but is expected to make a full recovery. The suspect barricaded himself inside his home on Longdale Drive. His mother was able to get out of the home safely, and no one else was injured. However, family members told deputies that the suspect may have other firearms and had mental health needs. The sheriff's SWAT team and crisis negotiation team responded, as well as a chaplain and a psychiatric emergency response team. Deputies evacuated 8 homes in the neighborhood while negotiations continued, which also prompted lockdown of the Lemon Grove Early Childhood Education Center as precaution. After hours of negotiations and nearby schools approaching time for students to head home, sheriff's officers deployed chemicals, which resulted in the suspect coming outside and surrendering. After evaluation by mental health clinicians, he was expected to be booked into San Diego Central Jail and charged with 3 counts of attempted murder. The sheriff has asked media to remind the public that if you or someone you know is experiencing a mental health crisis, help is always available by calling 988. For East County Magazine on KNSJ Radio, this is Henry Migala.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat report. The San Diego sheriff has arrested a man suspected of groping a 12-year-old girl in Santee. The student from Chet F. Herrett School was walking towards Big Rock Park on Arlette Street on May 18th, shortly before 4 p.m., when a man approached her and inappropriately touched her chest, says Lieutenant Anthony O'Boyle. According to O'Boyle, a friend who was with the victim tried to intervene by pushing away the suspect, who took off on a black and gray electric scooter. An employee at the Santee Teen Center, located at Big Rock Park, called the sheriff the next evening when he saw a man who matched the description of the suspect and his scooter. Deputies with the Santee Sheriff Station caught up to the suspect near the intersection of Prospect Avenue and Ellsworth Circle. The man matched the description of a suspect who was captured in surveillance video after the incident. 29-year-old Jose Lawrence Ruvalcaba was arrested May 20th and booked into San Diego Central Jail on a felony count of lewd and lascivious act on a child under 14 years old. He is being held on $250,000 bail. Lieutenant O'Doyle thanked the public and the media for spreading awareness on this case and being on the lookout for the suspect. As summer break approaches, it's likely children will be spending more time outdoors, so the Sheriff's Department is offering these tips that parents can discuss with children so they can stay safe in and out of school. Children should use the buddy system and avoid walking alone. Parents should plan, map out, and practice safe routes with children. Teach your kids not to talk to strangers and remind them to stay off of cell phones. They should be able to hear their surroundings when walking to school or a bus stop. Tell kids to trust their instincts. If they're being followed or something feels uncomfortable or they notice strange behavior, ask for help right away. If a stranger grabs your child, they should drop to the ground, kick, hit, bite, or scream. Make a scene and do whatever it takes to get the attention of others who can help. Tell children to go to a trusted adult, a teacher, coach, parent, older sibling, or law enforcement for help, and to report the incident immediately.
Authorities seek public help to locate a vehicle that struck a 40-year-old woman at Broadway and Harris Streets in Lemon Grove, then fled the area on Wednesday, May 24th, shortly after 12:30 a.m. Deputies found the woman, who died of her injuries. According to a witness, a possible F-150 pickup truck struck the female and left the scene, says Sergeant Michael Power with the San Diego County Sheriff's Department. The sheriff's traffic deputies in Lemon Grove are handling the investigation. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ashley Connor.
The San Diego Sheriff and San Diego County Animal Control Office are investigating the chilling possibility of a serial dog killer in Jamul. On May 21st, Jay Malari, who lives on Montiel Truck Trail off Lost Valley Road, offered a reward on Nextdoor to find his four missing dogs. Soon after, another resident posted that the bodies of four dead dogs had been dumped on the corner of West Boundary and Montiel Truck Trail. Mallard was devastated to learn that the bodies were those of his four rescued dogs, all under 2 years of age. Each of the bodies had suffered gunshots. Malari told CBS 8 it was like a murder scene. This may not be the first time the killer has struck. Malari's neighbor, Amber Recklaw, says her dog was fatally shot in the chest in 2019, and his body was dumped in the very same location as Malari's dogs. Both Recklaw and Malari say their dogs' collars were missing. Recklaw says she also received two mean-spirited letters about her dogs. Malari admits that his dogs had run loose at times, prompting some to levy criticism on social media. One poster said her baby llama was recently killed by a loose dog. But most local residents voiced outrage over the slaughter and fear for the safety of other pets. One sympathetic neighbor concluded, "We on Montiel Truck Trail do not shoot our neighbors' dogs. This is the country, and they do manage to find a way to escape." She said most neighbors try to reunite lost pets with their families and urged community members to be a good neighbor and don't kill other people's pets. It's just so wrong to be that evil, she says. If you have any information on who may have killed these dogs in Jamul, please contact the San Diego Sheriff or the San Diego County Animal Control Office. This is Miriam Raftery reporting from Jamul with this Crime Beat report.
A body found near campsites on the Los Coyotes Indian Reservation in Warner Springs back on February 16, 1986, has been identified through genetic genealogy as Claudette Jean Zabolski Powers. A second murder victim, a man, was found around the same time nearby. His body has not been identified. It's possible that these two cases are connected, according to the San Diego Sheriff. The sheriff's homicide unit used DNA testing and investigative genetic genealogy to identify the remains, calling this a, quote, major breakthrough in the cold case. Friends and family have been wondering what happened to Claudette Powers for over three decades. Powers moved to San Diego around 1983 or 1984 after leaving her husband in Washington State. She may have lived in Escondido and worked at a nearby restaurant shortly before her disappearance. With the mystery of her disappearance solved, Powers' family is finally able to mourn her death and lay her to rest. Now they hope someone will step up to provide a tip that will lead to an arrest. Laura Fries, younger sister of Powers, is asking anyone who knew Claudette Powers in the 1980s to please contact the sheriff's department. She says the loss has been hard on their family, especially Powers' daughters. She implores, "Somebody knows what happened. If you knew what happened to her, please come forward. Please, we need closure." Over the years, detectives kept working the case. They reviewed missing person reports and sought the public's assistance to help identify the victims, but the remains were not identified. Then, in February last year, the sheriff's cold case team, comprised of detectives, analysts, and the sheriff's regional crime unit, turned to investigative genetic genealogy to find leads. The sheriff's department uses publicly searchable genealogy websites that grant law enforcement access to data. Only the information people who consent to participate with law enforcement are visible to detectives. In this case, a DNA profile obtained from a sample of the victim's hair was compared to profiles on commercial websites. Research was also done on census records, obituaries, and other public information to build family trees so detectives were able to track down a relative of Powers. When speaking with relatives, detectives identify themselves, tell the person what they are investigating, and ask for assistance. This process led investigators to Claudette Powers' daughters, sister and mother. A DNA sample confirmed the match and the remains were positively identified. The San Diego County Sheriff's Homicide Unit and San Diego County Crime Stoppers are asking for information to help solve this case. You can call the Sheriff's Homicide Unit at 858-285-6330. Or you can remain anonymous by calling in a tip to Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477. You could be eligible for up to a $1,000 reward for information that leads to a felony arrest. This is the seventh time the Sheriff's Homicide Unit has used investigative genetic genealogy to solve or identify remains in a cold case. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ Radio, this is Henry Migala.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
San Diego County supervisors have authorized a primary special election on August 14th to fill the vacancy in District 4 left by Nathan Fletcher's resignation. If no candidate wins a majority of votes in the primary, then a general election will be held on November 7th. Candidates who want to run can file paperwork at the Registrar of Voters office between May 30th and June 6th. District 4 includes the East County communities of La Mesa, Lemon Grove, Crest, Dehesa, Spring Valley, Mount Helix, and Rancho San Diego, as well as the SDSU College area and San Diego neighborhoods such as Claremont, Hillcrest, North Park, Old Town, Mission Hills, Normal Heights, Encanto, Paradise Hills, City Heights, Rolando, Kensington, Talmadge, and Mission Valley. Fletcher resigned as supervisor after allegations that he harassed and sexually abused a Metropolitan Transit District employee while he was serving as MTS chair. The alleged victim has filed a lawsuit against Fletcher and MTS. Fletcher resigned from MTS but claims the relationship was consensual, which the employee denies. With 3.5 years left in Fletcher's term, the remaining four supervisors unanimously voted for a special election instead of appointing to fill that vacancy, so voters will decide on their next supervisor, with options to vote by mail or in person at 14 vote centers, half of those with early voting. The primary election will cost between $2.1 and $2.6 million. If a general election is required, it would also cost that much, meaning taxpayers could foot the bill for up to $5.2 million. So far, three candidates have launched campaigns for the seat. They are Monica Montgomery Stepps, a Democrat and President Pro Tem of the San Diego City Council, Amy Reichart, a Republican activist and founder of Reopen San Diego, and Janessa Goldbeck, a Democrat, Marine veteran, and CEO of Vet Voice Foundation. District 4 has never had a woman representative, but that appears poised to change if any of the three women who have announced so far win the election. Here is some more information about those three candidates' backgrounds, issue priorities, and endorsements. Monica Montgomery Stepps calls herself the People's Council member. Representing the 4th District on the San Diego City Council, she advocates for equitable practices in government and improved relationships between community members and police. She attributes the latter to a 50% drop in the murder rate in her district. If elected, she would be the first Black woman supervisor. Besides serving as City Council President, she chairs the Budget and Government Efficiency Committee and serves on committees that oversee transportation, economic development, and public safety. She also serves on that MTS Board of Directors, the San Diego Workforce Partnership, and other area agencies. On the Council, she led efforts for police reforms and creating the Office of Race and Equity. She has supported increased support for small businesses and job training, investing in marginalized communities, building affordable homes for seniors and veterans, and increasing services for homeless people as well as those battling addiction. She has a law degree from Cal Western School of Law and worked as a criminal justice advocate for the ACLU, as well as senior policy advisor for San Diego before her election to the City Council. If elected supervisor, Stepps wants to create jobs and opportunities for working families, invest in small businesses, workforce development programs, job training and apprenticeships, as well as expand access to capital for entrepreneurs and startups. She favors increasing the county's minimum wage and supporting affordable housing, expanding homeless shelters and services, mental health, access to affordable health care, and parks. She also wants to increase supervisors' oversight over law enforcement, reduce jail deaths, and assure that first responders and neighborhoods have resources needed to reduce crime. Stepps is endorsed by Assemblymember Dr. Akilah Weber, La Mesa City Councilmember Patricia Dillard, San Diego City Council President Sean Elo Rivera, Service Employees International Union Local 221, San Diego Community College District President Maria Nieto Senor, and others. She states, "I know how the system works, and I've proven we can make it better," adding, "It's time to move forward and build trust in San Diego County." Amy Reichardt is a conservative activist and mother who became involved in politics during the pandemic, fighting to reopen businesses and schools. She founded the nonprofit Reopen San Diego and calls herself a woman on a mission running to restore life, liberty, and love to San Diego. Her priorities are lowering the cost of living, solving the homeless epidemic, and increasing public safety in communities. She wants to reduce costs of government regulations on housing construction and speed up approvals of projects. She opposes SANDAG's proposed vehicle mileage tax. She would create homeless outreach teams staffed with social workers, mental health care workers, and law enforcement to help homeless people get access to services and clean up the streets. An ordained minister, she is a former Celebrate Recovery leader through her church, helping people with drug and alcohol addictions. Countywide, Reichardt notes that violent crime is up 14% over the last year, but the sheriff's department is understaffed by 240 deputies. She wants to boost recruitment efforts to hire more of them. Other priorities of Reichardt's include making sure COVID relief funds go to those who were hurt most by lockdowns and business closures, eliminating discriminatory mandates, keeping county meetings open to the public, and prioritizing mental health. The latter is personal for Reichardt, who struggled with post-traumatic stress disorder and depression after suffering the death of her newborn daughter and her father within 5 weeks. Raised in Tierra Santa by adoptive parents after losing her father, a search for her biological mother inspired her to pursue a career as an investigator. As a PI, she has tracked down missing persons and uncovered Medicare fraud. Her investigation of the hospital where her newborn daughter died led to a state investigation and the hospital held legally responsible. She and her husband, Christian Reichardt, live in La Mesa with their two sons, Alex and Chris. Her endorsements include prominent Republicans, such as Congressman Daryl Issa, El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells, and State Senator Brian Jones, as well as the San Diego County Republican and Libertarian parties. Janessa Goldbeck says, "For me, it's always about the mission." A decorated Marine Corps veteran, she served as a uniformed victim advocate in the Marines, standing up for victims of sexual assault and fighting a ban on women holding top jobs in the military. Before joining the Marines as a combat engineer officer, she worked as a human rights advocate to protect civilians in conflict zones in Sudan and Myanmar. She has a bachelor's degree from Northwestern University and a master's of arts degree from the University of San Francisco. Raised in San Diego County, Goldbeck cut short her military career to care for her mother with Alzheimer's, an experience that she says has made her a strong advocate for caregivers. She and her wife, Carol, live in San Diego. She serves as CEO of Vet Voice Foundation, a national nonprofit that gives military families a bigger say on issues such as lowering costs for families, workers' rights, and inequality. Locally, she's fought for affordable and middle-income housing, union jobs, equal pay for women, particularly minorities, resources to prevent veteran suicides, LGBTQ services, common sense gun measure safety measures, and service for homeless youths. She calls herself an avid explorer and advocate for the outdoors, as well as an experienced policy advocate. According to her website, Goldbeck played a leading role in securing one of the largest federal investments in recreation infrastructure, public lands, land and water conservation, working with the Biden administration to designate three new national monuments. Goldbeck also serves on several boards, including the UCSD Chancellor's Community Advisory Group, the San Diego LGBT Community Center, and the county's Behavioral Health Advisory Board. Her endorsements include Democratic Congressman Mike Levine, Juan Vargas, and Scott Peters, former Congresswoman Susan Davis, and California Senate President Pro Tem Tony Atkins. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
15 properties are under quarantine in San Diego's East County by the U.S. Department of Agriculture because of an outbreak of vesicular stomatitis, a disease afflicting livestock. John Tidwell now has an update on this situation and information on how you can protect your animals.
A viral disease called vesicular stomatitis, or VS, has been confirmed in 6 horses in San Diego County, including one in Ramona. Lab tests are underway on samples from 9 other local livestock animals suspected of having VS. There are also 2 confirmed cases in Riverside County, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. VS causes severe blister-like lesions and crusty scabs on the mouths and hooves of horses, cattle, and pigs. The blisters are so painful that afflicted animals often won't eat, suffer weight loss, and may show signs of lameness. The disease is spread by the bites of flies, but can also spread to humans who handle an infected animal. In people, the disease causes flu-like symptoms. Use gloves if examining the mouth, nose, or feet of a horse, cow, or pig. Call your veterinarian if your animal shows signs of VS, which is a reportable disease and requires testing to confirm. There is no vaccine available. Fortunately, the disease is rarely fatal, but it's important to help stop the spread of this debilitating illness. The disease takes 2 to 8 days from exposure to appear and usually runs its course in about 2 weeks, though sores can take up to 2 months to resolve. Dr. Craig Chandler, a veterinarian at the East County Large and Small Veterinary Clinic, offers these tips to livestock owners. To prevent VS, use fly control methods such as fly spray, fly predators, removal of manure that attracts flies, and or fly masks to cover your horse's ears. Avoid shared water or feed troughs to prevent spreading the virus. Clean common surfaces with accelerated hydrogen peroxide or commercial disinfectants with bleach. Sunlight is known to kill the VS virus. Pasture grazing increases exposure to insects, including flies. Isolate any animals with VS or animals exposed to VS for at least 14 days after the last case. Do not travel until a veterinarian has cleared you to do so. Horse show managers will determine whether horses from affected counties will be allowed to participate, and some states may ban livestock from areas with VS. So check before traveling, even if your animal is not affected. If a horse is suspected positive at a horse show, the horses on premises may be subjected to quarantine on site for a minimum of 14 days. Some stabling facilities may go into lockdown and not allow animals to enter or leave, even if there is not a suspected case on the premises, to prevent exposure. You can learn more about vesicular stomatitis, or VS, at the U.S. Department of Agriculture's website. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
Now it's time for East County Magazine's Scammers, Schemers, and Swindlers report, shining a light on shady deals all around us.
California Attorney General Rob Bonta and a bipartisan coalition of 49 attorneys general have filed a lawsuit against Avid Telecom for allegedly making billions of unlawful robocalls in California and across the nation. Those robocalls included Social Security scams, Medicare scams, and employment scams. Here is an example of one of them.
Hello, this is Audrey, and I'm a Social Security Disability Advisor on a recorded line, and you can press 1 to be removed. Now, I show here that you recently inquired about your eligibility for Social Security Disability Benefits. Can you hear me okay?
The complaint is the result of efforts by the Nationwide Anti-Robocall Litigation Task Force, which Attorney General Bonta helped launch last year. Attorney General Bonta says, as the people's attorney, I've been laser-focused on protecting consumers since taking office, and stopping unwanted robocalls is an important bipartisan and nationwide effort. In addition to being a daily annoyance, robocalls can and do cause real financial damage. He adds, I'm taking Avid Telecom to court for delivering not hundreds or thousands or even millions of robocalls, but billions of robocalls. Our coalition alleges that Avid Telecom has violated federal and state laws, and we are confident that we will prevail. From December of 2018 to January of 2023, Avid Telecom is accused of sending or trying to transmit over 24.5 billion calls to consumers, including 7.5 billion calls to phone numbers on the National Do Not Call Registry. Over 500,000 of those calls were to telephone numbers in California. Registering for the National Do Not Call Registry allows consumers to legally opt out from receiving telemarketing calls, but robocallers regularly fail to respect such legal prohibitions. In the multi-state coalition's complaint, among other misconduct, Attorney General Bonta alleges that Avid Telecom violated the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, the Telemarketing Sales Rule, the Truth in Caller ID Act, and California's unfair competition law. If you receive a robocall trying to sell you something or persuade you to provide personal information that could be used in identity theft, just hang up. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ashley Connor.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
La Mesa City Councilwoman Laura Lothian ran a proposal up the flagpole during the May 23rd City Council meeting, but saw it shot down in a hail of public criticism, Times of San Diego reports. About 40 in-person and online speakers blasted her idea of barring City Hall from flying any banners other than the American, California, and city flags, while just one person spoke in favor. Critics interpreted her proposal to mean prohibiting the rainbow gay pride flag, which the city has flown each June during Pride Month since 2020. Representatives of the Regional Anti-Defamation League, State Senator Steve Padilla, and Assemblywoman Akilah Weber, a former La Mesa councilwoman, spoke against the policy. So did teenagers, longtime La Mesa residents, several ministers, and Brianna Costin, a La Mesa Spring Valley School Board member. Christine Wood, the transgender woman whose use of the Santee YMCA locker room sparked right-wing protest, praised La Mesa as not just the jewel of the hills, but the jewel of East County. "I know that you will defeat this ugliness," Wood said. After nearly 2 hours of sometimes tear-filled testimony on behalf of the LGBTQ community, Lothian decided not to introduce her motion, admitting that any motion she'd make would die for lack of a second. She said her intent was meant to avoid alienating residents and to respond to those who don't want the city to fly political flags of any sort. On Instagram, she posted, "Police can't fly the thin blue line flag. You can't have rules for some people and not for others. That is the definition of hypocrisy and discrimination," she said. Mary Davis was the only backer who spoke in support of Lothian's proposal on the same night when the city issued a proclamation marking June as LGBTQ plus Pride Month. Davis said La Mesa's flagpole should be neutral on social issues. "La Mesa is already a diverse, loving, accepting city. You don't need to prove that with a flag," she said. Then she suggested that allowing the pride flag creates a slippery slope, and she turned toward the audience to unfurl what she called the National Sanctity of Life flag. The crowd groaned. Davis said when she asked to fly the pro-life flag at City Hall, she was ignored. She suggested erecting a dedicated celebratory flagpole somewhere else in the city where community members could rotate flags of their choice. Earlier, Unitarian Universalist minister Dr. Melissa James recalled holding a birthday party for her young daughter at a La Mesa park and seeing a sidewalk covered in homophobic chalk-marked slurs. She told Lothian, "My family can't afford the luxury of your neutrality." Former Marine Janessa Goldbeck, a candidate for the District 4 County Supervisor seat vacated by Nathan Fletcher, recalled serving during the military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell regime, a policy that sent a message that discrimination was tolerated. She said the Lothian plan would take her back to those dark days. Former Sheriff candidate Dave Myers spoke and then handed Lothian a small pride flag. After public comments, Lothian said she is half Guatemalan and a woman, but now is being called a Nazi, a bigot, and a white supremacist. She said the historic Betsy Ross flag was being labeled a hate flag. Lothian told the crowd, "My closest friends are a lesbian couple I go to Mexico with. This was never, never about you." And she added, "I only brought this up because I just want people to come to City Hall, do their business, get their permits, get their licenses, and not see a politicized message." With the issue dead, Councilman Jack Hsu had this to say, drawing cheers and applause from those present. "Thank you, Councilwoman Lothian, because you've made my night, by me being able to see one side of La Mesa that I want to see more often. This report is based on an article that first appeared in Times of San Diego and was reprinted on East County Magazine. Reporting from La Mesa on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Ashley Connor with the East County Magazine's People Power Report. Ginger Rich, owner of the Reflection Salon and Day Spa in Lakeside, was once homeless in San Diego. Because of those who believed in her, she is now a successful businesswoman, owning the salon for over 7 years. In each of those 7 years, she's held Haircuts for the Homeless, which is an outreach event to help those in need, offering not only just haircuts, but also clothing, food, and personal essentials to the people experiencing homelessness. In addition, the county and private organizations offered services and resources to those present. OG's Pizza and Mary's Donuts donated lunch and snacks. This year's event had around 100 people already receiving haircuts as the event got underway. Owner Ginger Rich says, "We do this out of kindness and to give back to the community." She estimates there are approximately 75 homeless individuals in Lakeside. And she says, "I want to let them know that they are loved," adding, "It is an honor to see all of the people helping and paying it forward."
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine's Green Scene Report. Loveland Reservoir in Alpine has been closed since January after heavy storms caused major erosion to trails left exposed by Sweetwater Water Authority's decision to drain the lake to Deadpool status for the first time in history last December. Though rains have replenished water levels to above the heavily eroded banks, public access has not been restored, much to the consternation of area residents. So on May 17th, East County residents in support of reopening Loveland packed the hearing room at the Sweetwater Water Authority headquarters in Chula Vista to voice their views. But Loveland supporters, many of whom had traveled more than an hour from Alpine to speak, became angered when Board Chairman Hector Martinez announced that commenters would be limited to just 1 minute each instead of the 3 minutes listed on the agenda. Over a chorus of objections, he assured that the district is working on options such as a bridge to make it safe to reopen the reservoir eventually. During public comments, residents called on the district to reopen the lake and its trails now that heavy rains have submerged the damaged areas that had posed hazards. Many also urged that the lake be restocked with fish and spoke passionately of what Loveland means to them. Trail advocate John Allen noted that Loveland's parking lot is the only safe parking for the California Riding and Hiking Trail, which runs to ANZA, as well as to adjacent Forest Service lands. David Thomas voiced anger to board members that after promising to keep the lake open after COVID closures, quote, "You suffocated every single fish," he asked. "How is this legal for you to kill every single fish in that lake?" Noting that he has to buy a fishing license to catch even one fish. Karen Wood recalled a land swap with the Forest Service that required Sweetwater to maintain shoreline access for fishing at Loveland. "The primary reason you own that lake is because you promised to expand recreation," she said. "Our request is simple. Restore fishing, and reopen the lake." She also asked the district to commit to never drain Loveland to Deadpool status again. Alpine Community Planning Group member Mary Davis chastised the board for limiting public comments, which she called a form of censorship and suppression. Hummel resident Sean Walsh read aloud a letter that State Senator Brian Jones sent to Sweetwater, in which Jones voiced strong support to reopen Loveland and offered to help facilitate cooperation among agencies to make that happen. Russell Walsh, an avid fisherman and advocate for Loveland, criticized the change in speakers' time limits with no notice as unconscionable. He said the lake can reopen since the erosion is now underwater after recent rains. Robert Kilpatrick, a former volunteer firefighter, said when Loveland was drained to virtually empty before the recent rains, if we'd had a major fire, it would have added 10 to 15 minutes to access water for firefighting. He urged the board to adopt the statement promising that you'll never do it again. Annie Wolin affirmed the importance of Loveland's water to fight fires. "We were there during the Valley Fire," she said, "and it was very scary." Mary Hicks also recalled that in 2000, firefighting aircraft scooped water from the reservoir to stop fires from burning homes over the hill. Elisa Perkins teaches integrity to students at the Cuyamaca Outdoor School. She told the board, "Integrity means doing the right thing when no one is looking," adding, "We drove all this way to ask you to do the right thing." After public comments, Chairman Martinez asked General Manager Carlos Quintero to provide an update on the Loveland situation. Quintero told the crowd that the budget being voted on later in the meeting included a $50,000 item to study options such as constructing a bridge along the west side of the trail, adding that the district is working with its insurance company to replace or repair the damaged fishing dock. Then he said the district hopes to reopen the trail within the next few weeks. The board later voted unanimously to approve the draft budget, including that Loveland funding item. A final vote will be held in June. But Sweetwater's general manager and directors did not provide any timetable for restocking Loveland Reservoir with fish, leaving fishing advocates frustrated at the prospect of a reopened lake and rebuilt fishing dock without any fish.
The U.S. Supreme Court has gutted federal protections for much of the country's wetlands. The court found that the Waters of the United States rule, part of the Clean Water Act, only applies to wetlands with a surface connection to a navigable body of water. Conservation groups say that puts up to 80% of U.S. wetlands at risk for pollution and development, with ephemeral streams and headwaters in western states at particular risk. Alex Funk with the Theodore Roosevelt Conservation Partnership predicts the ruling will have widespread negative consequences.
This is going to put major setbacks on our ability to adapt to climate change, respond to extreme weather events. So anyone that hunts fishes or recreates, there was a big hit to that from the court.
The case was brought by a family in Idaho that was prevented from building on their land. The court unanimously decided that the EPA rule did not apply to their property, but then went much further, narrowing the authority of the agency nationwide. Supporters cheered the ruling, saying the Obama-era Waters of the U.S. rule went too far and had been a burden to property owners. Funk says pristine wetlands are the superstars of the natural infrastructure.
Everything from mitigating downstream flood impacts by absorbing runoff and precipitation, to encouraging groundwater recharge, to improving water quality, capturing sediment and other pollutants that might end up in drinking water supplies, and of course, you know, the fish and wildlife impacts.
California Governor Gavin Newsom said in a statement that California has adopted some of the strongest laws in this country to protect our waters and the environment, and we will continue enforcing our own laws vigorously. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
New basketball courts at Wells Park in El Cajon opened on May 25th. The 18-acre park was built in 1953 and is in the middle of the city's most population-dense residential housing area. The new basketball courts are the latest addition to Wells Park, which already features several lighted sports fields, a playground, a large dog park featuring separate areas for large and small dogs, as well as a canine agility course, an outdoor fitness course, and an outdoor mini-pitch soccer court. New restroom facilities are under construction and scheduled to open at the start of the summer. A new pickleball court will also begin construction within the following year. Parks and Recreation Director Frank Carson says the new courts are a welcome addition to the neighborhood. Local youth now have even more opportunities to safely engage in community recreation. El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells says, "We are incredibly excited to open these basketball courts adjacent to our already installed soccer arena. It is a part of our ongoing mission to further develop Wells Park as a safe outdoor recreation hub for our El Cajon families." A study by the U.S. Department of Agriculture found that adding additional recreation in public parks decreases crimes in areas as much as 17%. The cost of the new basketball courts is $245,000, with 100% of the funding coming from the Community Development Block Grant administered by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ Radio, this is Henry Migala.
This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
Construction has begun on a high-rise boutique luxury hotel, the Hamul Indian Village Development Corporation announced on May 23rd. Erica Pinto, chairwoman, says the hotel will allow us to effectively expand our footprint in the market while increasing funding for fire protection to serve all of San Diego County, as well as provide 125 new permanent jobs and 1,000 construction jobs. The economic impact of the hotel will have far-reaching and long-term positive effects on our tribal nation, state, and local economy, she says. The project has drawn opposition from the Hamul del Zura Community Planning Group and some residents who have voiced concerns over traffic on State Route 94, environmental impacts, and other issues. The 16-story boutique hotel will offer 200 rooms, including 52 suites, and be accompanied by a 6-story parking structure. Casino guests will directly access the hotel through a pedestrian sky bridge. The hotel will also offer retail space, meeting and banquet facilities, a restaurant, spa and salon with outdoor deck, a fitness center, guest rooms and suites for VIP guests, and a rooftop pool deck with bar. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. Concerts, comedy, car shows, a flag day parade, food festivals, a hawk talk, a pride walk, and Descanso Days are among the fun and festive events coming up in San Diego's Inland Region in June.
The Julian Community Heritage Foundation will host its second annual Town Square Music Festival on June 3rd. This music festival will feature 7 live bands, as well as food, local artisans, raffles, silent auctions, and more. All donations will benefit the continued development of the Julian Town Square in the heart of historic Julian. For more information, go to juliantownsquare.org.
You're invited to join the city of La Mesa in saluting Old Glory during the city's annual Flag Day Parade. The parade begins at 10 a.m. on June 3rd at the intersection of Memorial Drive, University Avenue, and La Mesa Boulevard, then heads west through the La Mesa Village to Acacia Avenue. The Grossmont High School Royal Blue Regiment and the Navy Junior ROTC Color Guard will lead the parade. This year's Grand Marshal will be Carol Lockwood, chosen based on 50 years of service as an educator in the Grossmont Union High School District and for her involvement in many city projects, committees, and programs. The La Mesa Community Relations and Veterans Commission will provide ice cream bars at the Lookout at Legacy Park on the corner of La Mesa Boulevard, 4th Street and Allison Avenue. For more information, you can visit cityoflamesa.us.
Descanso's first community fair was held in 1899 under a tent near the creek. The tradition has grown through the years to include a parade and community fair, which this year will be held on June 3rd. The festivities will take place at the historic Descanso Town Hall. Arrive early since roads close at 8 a.m. for the parade, which begins at 9 a.m. The parade is followed by the fair, which begins at 10 a.m. and runs until 4 p.m. You're invited to get your boots on to learn about the town's history and enjoy the fun, which includes music by Whiskey Ridge, food by Descanso Junction, and beer served up by Burning Beard Brewing Company. There will also be vendors, children's games, face painting, horseshoe tournaments, a cakewalk, raffle, and more.
The Lemon Grove Lions Club invites you to its Salsa y Salsa Fiesta on Saturday, June 3rd from 6 to 9 p.m. on Olive Street in Lemon Grove. The event will celebrate the Lions Club's 8th anniversary and raise funds for local service projects. The evening includes a no-host bar, raffles, silent auction, salsa contest, DJ, and a performance by the fabulous 5 dancers SD Forever Lions Club. Organizers encourage everybody to support local service projects, vote for your favorite salsa, and have a hot time.
Mission Trails Regional Park invites you to a hawk talk on the first Sunday of each month from 9 a.m. to noon in their visitor center. The next hawk talk will be on June 4th. Meet local falconer Bob Gordon and his feathered friend Huxley the Harris Hawk. You can get up close and personal with his majestic bird of prey while learning what makes these raptors so special. For more information, visit the Mission Trails Regional Park website at mtrp.org.
Friends of the Casa de Oro Library will hold a benefit concert on Sunday, June 4th at 7 p.m. in a private home. The featured entertainment will be Fred Benedetti and Robert Wetzel, an award-winning guitar duo. Light refreshments will be served. Friends of the Casa de Oro Library are raising funds to build a new library for the community. For tickets, you can email casalibraryfriends@gmail.com.
The Santee United Methodist Church is sponsoring a Pride Walk on June 10th, supporting the LGBTQ community, diversity, and inclusion in Santee. The two-mile walk will start with a brief kickoff rally from 12:30 to 1 p.m. at the church on Magnolia Avenue, just north of Mission Gorge Road. Speakers include the church's pastor, Santee Mayor John Minto, a Republican and Democratic Party officials.
El Cajon's outdoor concert series continues every Friday night from 5 to 8 p.m. at Prescott Promenade in downtown El Cajon. The entertainment lineup for June includes Upstream, Scott Bruce, Jimmy's Buffet, 80s All-Stars, and Billy Nation, a tribute to Billy Joel. The city also hosts Cajon Classic Cruises each Wednesday from 5 to 7:30 p.m. along Main Street in downtown El Cajon. You can find a full schedule of events for both concerts and car shows at downtownelcajon.com.
The 29th annual La Mesa Classic Car Show and Live Music event rolls into downtown La Mesa every Thursday from 5 to 8 p.m. beginning June 1st through August 31st. Visitors can stroll down La Mesa Boulevard between 4th and Spring Streets to see classic cars, trucks, and vans, and listen to live music every week from local bands that play atop the iconic La Mesa Lumber Truck stage at 3rd and La Mesa Boulevard. There's also a DJ every Thursday evening all summer long.
The California Note Catchers, a women's four-part harmony chorus, will be presenting Sounds of Summer on Saturday, June 17th at 2 p.m. The concert will be held at the La Mesa First United Methodist Church on Palm Avenue in La Mesa. The chorus will be singing classic and traditional songs. Also featured will be community guest ensembles. For more information, visit CaliforniaNoteCatchers.com.
Saps at Sea, the San Diego chapter of the Sons of the Desert, the Laurel and Hardy Appreciation Society, will present their June meeting, Stan and Ollie in Cop Troubles, on June 17th at Trinity Presbyterian Church in Spring Valley, with several hilarious film showings. Doors open at 6:30 p.m., with the show starting at 7. For more information, visit the Saps at Sea Facebook page.
SDG&E is inviting community members to attend a wildfire safety fair on June 24th at Joan McQueen Middle School in Alpine from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. The event includes wildfire mitigation, weed-eating goats, safety kit giveaways, kids' arts and crafts, presentations by SDG&E, local firefighters and community partners, sign-up assistance for power outage notifications, and bill discount programs, as well as food and entertainment.
The La Mesa Chamber of Commerce's 14th annual popular foodie event, Tastes of San Diego East, is set for Monday, June 26th, starting at 4:30 p.m. at the newly renovated Town & Country Hotel in Mission Valley. The popularity and crowd of this annual event has outgrown the La Mesa Community Center, where it was held for the first 10 years. Guests are invited to taste, savor, mingle in the ballroom, and visit the businesses. There will be food samples, prizes, a silent auction, and raffles. For tickets and reservations, visit lamesachamber.net/taste.
The City of Lemon Grove invites you to Concerts in the Park every Thursday evening from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at Berry Street Park on Mount Vernon Street. The concerts run from June 29th through August 10th. Bring a blanket or a lawn chair, along with your own picnic or barbecue. Alcohol is prohibited and the park is smoke-free. All pets must be on a leash.
Visionary Youth Theater presents Grease, School Version, at the Visionary Performance Space in La Mesa from June 30th through July 9th. The hit musical with hip-shaking rock and roll score celebrates Rydell High's class of 1959 in all their duck-tailed, bobby-socked, gum-snapping glory. The fun-loving spirit and immortal songs make Grease a favorite amongst rock and roll fans of all ages. For tickets, you can visit visionarydancetheater.org.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, attractions, and events across San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
Over 1,700 people have died of fentanyl overdoses in San Diego County since 2019, so law enforcement agencies have surged enforcement efforts. This past week, the U.S. Attorney's Office in San Diego announced that the surge has resulted in seizure of over 4,700 pounds of fentanyl, 1,700 pounds of fentanyl precursors, and more than 200 arrests of alleged smugglers, traffickers, and dealers in Southern and Central California. The surge, labeled Operation Blue Lotus, was launched by the Department of Homeland Security along the southwest border between March 13th and May 10th. In San Diego County alone, the two-month surge has resulted in a 300% increase in fentanyl seizures compared to the same period last year, as well as a 30% increase in defendants prosecuted for fentanyl-related crimes in the Southern District of California. Now, this operation involved deployment of an extra 85 Homeland Security investigation special agents, as well as 35 Customs and Border Protection officers, many more targeted inspections at the border, use of advanced technology, and intensified intelligence gathering to build criminal cases against transnational criminal organizations, as well as U.S.-based distribution networks. U.S. Attorney Randy Grossman says we are an epicenter for fentanyl trafficking into the United States, and we know the immense responsibility that we bear to address this crisis. We are answering that call to action with hard work, a purpose, and a plan. And, he noted, every milligram of fentanyl that we seize and every smuggler, trafficker, and dealer that we bring to justice means less fatal doses on the streets of San Diego and beyond. Fentanyl seized during the Blue Lotus operation also tested positive for xylazine. The White House has designated the combination of xylazine and fentanyl as an emerging threat to the U.S. based on xylazine's growing role in overdose deaths. In addition to the surge through Operation Blue Lotus, law enforcement officials here have attacked the fentanyl crisis through aggressive prosecutions at every level of the supply chain, from the Sinaloa cartel leadership to cross-border trafficking organizations to money launderers and street-level dealers selling drugs that result in overdose deaths. These are the result of a collaboration among the U.S. Attorney's Office and multi-jurisdictional task forces focused on fighting the fentanyl crisis, including the Fentanyl Abatement and Suppression Team, or FAST. That's a joint federal, state, and local enforcement task force that targets fentanyl distribution networks in Southern California. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia, and the Smashing Beats. Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show, or get involved as a volunteer on our Public Interest News Show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.